Just want to make sure I can see what time it is, because while there are some slots that there's flexibility, I think this is not one of them. It's a great kavod, it's a great honor for me to have the privilege to speak from this pulpit in the shul, in this esteemed community, so well known and from which we've learned so much and seek to emulate, and to be with not only dear colleagues, Rabbi Axelrod, Rabbi Schechter, Rabbi Wolf, but to be with dear friends as well. So I thank you for having me this evening. Gemara Shabbos Daf Kuf Yud Ches tells us a famous statement. Om Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai Yomalei Mishamrim Yisrael Shtei Shabbosos Ki Ilchason Miyad Nigalim. The Jewish people would only properly keep if we could only observe two Shabboses. Finally, we would achieve that redemption that we so long for, that this past 24 hours has been all about. In our history, we've never succeeded in keeping two Shabbosos. We've never kept two Shabboses in a row. What does it mean? Rav Mendel of Vitebsk famously explains that the Gemara is not suggesting two random Shabboses. It's not saying if we could only string together two Shabboses and get it right. But the Gemara is referring to two specific Shabbosim. Shabbos Chazon last week, and Shabbos Nachamu this coming week. If only we can draw the lessons of both. If only we could create the connection between the two. If only we could tap into the themes. Then, miyad nigalan, we would achieve that redemption. Mashiach would finally arrive. We are moments from completing the first half of the equation. The 3 weeks, the 9 days, Shavua Shechalbo, Tisha B'Av, which ends in just a few moments from now. We've been sitting on the floor. We have been reciting the kinos and hearing their explanations. We've been reading testimonies from the Holocaust, seeing the most moving videos, listening to incredible interviews and stories. And now we've gotten off the floor. You just took off your talis and tefillin, and we finally recited Nachem, accessing the comfort we seek. And we're transitioning to the second half, to finding Nechama, to finding consolation. And the question I want to address to you this evening in our short time is, what is that Nechama? Where can it be found? Why is it so elusive? Most fundamentally, how can we claim that here on in, as of this afternoon with Nachem moving into Chatzos tomorrow, and certainly by 1:01 tomorrow afternoon, Nechama, consolation, comfort, as if everything is okay. There'll be a line at the barber. The phone will be blasting music. We'll be attending barbecues galore, Fleischfest and Western Rodeo Barbecue. We don't have those yet in Florida. I'll have to bring them. But the truth is, what's different? Tonight we're fasting. Tomorrow night we're Fleischfesting. And what's the difference? The condition of the Jewish people around the world is no different tomorrow than it is today, than it was yesterday. Israel's enemies still seek her annihilation. The news out just yesterday and today, how the U.S. administration, as if this is some chiddush, has come to the conclusion that peace for Israel and her neighbors is likely unattainable. Anti-Semitism continues to be on the rise in Europe, and growing incidents right here in the United States. Some of us in this room, and undoubtedly every single one of us, have friends who are fighting horrible diagnoses and confronting loneliness and seeking to overcome infertility and struggling to put food on their table. What's different? We just said Nachem and now everything's okay. Nachemu, Nachemu Ami, the Shabbos concerts and Shabbatonim and singles weekends, and now everything's okay. Rav Pinkus points out that Nechama is never about getting back what we lost. When we pay a Shiva call and we offer Nechama Avelim, we seek to provide Nechama, we can't bring the deceased back to life. As much as we wish we could, as badly as we want to relieve the pain of the other, the act of Nicham, of Nechama, the goal is not to replace what's lost. If we could replace what's lost, the person doesn't need to be comforted. They have what they were missing. So what then is Nechama? What is this second stage? What is the second half of that formula that if we can tap into it, miyad nigalim, then finally we can achieve the redemption? Perhaps an answer can be found in the ancient and somewhat mysterious text known as Perek Shira. It's grown in popularity lately to recite it. Wonderful picture books have come out of it. It's unclear entirely its authorship, though many believe it was written by David HaMelech after he completed Sefer Tehillim. It is referenced by Rishonim like the Ramban. Perek Shira lists 84 elements of the natural world. The sky, earth, all kinds of animals, and it shows that the natural world and everything in it sings God's praises. The whole world is in a harmonious movement that praises the Ribono Shel Olam. It's God's symphony. And in Perek Shira it says the following, Ritzifi Omer, certain type of bird, the Ritzifi, says, Nachamu Nachamu Ami Yomar Elokechem. This Ritzifi bird recites the pasuk of our upcoming Haftorah, Nachamu Nachamu Ami. What does this cryptic statement mean? What is the hidden message? What does the Ritzifi do? And why did David HaMelech suggest that somehow from the Ritzifi bird we can learn how to find Nechama? It's a 17th century Moroccan commentary on Perek Shira called the Knaf Renanim. I wasn't studying it inside, but it's quoted by others, who explains that this bird, the Ritzifi, lives in the north. And, like some of you, as Rabbi Axelrod referenced, does not like the cold. And so this bird, like many from the five towns, makes its way to the south for the winter. Many birds do that, but the Ritzifi does not join the other birds. The Ritzifi bird, says the Knaf Renanim, stays behind. Why? Because he doesn't want to miss the beginning of the spring. He longs for springtime, for the blossoming and the flourishing and the first hint of breaking out of the cold, dark winter. He wants to remain behind so he doesn't go down. So how does he survive? How do the species of bird, the Ritzifi, survive the harsh, cold winter if they remain up north? So the Knaf Renanim explains, incredibly, that these birds form a tight circle. And each bird puts its head under the feathers of the bird next to it. And the Ritzifi survives the winter and stays warm. How? By connecting with the fellow birds around it. By finding shelter and providing shelter. By creating a community of the same species, all experiencing and confronting the same condition, and not failing, not becoming vulnerable to that condition, but overcoming it. How? By finding shelter within one another. By creating a circle, by snuggling, by nuzzling its head under the feathers, under the wings of the one next to it. These birds coordinate their effort. They find cover simultaneously. And it's from their behavior that we learn, Ritzifi Omer, Nachamu Nachamu Ami. What the Knaf Renanim is telling us, that David HaMelech was teaching, you want to know how to survive the cold winter, a 2,000-year cold winter, how to survive terrorism, how to survive a BDS movement, how to survive illness and infertility and loneliness and financial struggles and woes and relationships that are broken. You want to know how to find the strength to endure, to overcome the harshness of the winter? Turn to the Ritzifi. Nachamu Nachamu Ami. It's by doing what he does. By connecting with those around us. By providing shelter and finding shelter simultaneously. By feeling a sense of unity, of achdus, of togetherness. By connecting with a sense of empathy and kindness. Not only, you see, if every bird only cared about its own shelter, they could never survive. And if every bird only cared about providing shelter for others, it wouldn't survive. It's the coordinated, simultaneous effort to create a community of people finding comfort within one another. That's where they survive. And so true, as Tisha B'Av this year is disappearing, and will soon be in the rearview mirror, and we will gladly look forward to the music, the laundry, the clean clothes, the shower, the good breath, the flesh. It's true that nothing's different about our circumstance in the world, collectively, nationally, or as individuals. And yet there is something that is different. Because if we tapped into Shabbos Chazon, if we had a meaningful Tisha B'Av for the last 24 hours, it means that we have felt the pain of others. Whether it's the pain of the Churban, or of the Kohanim, or of the Kalim, the pain of the Crusades, or the Inquisition, or the Holocaust, the pain of whatever video was in our inbox, whatever interview we saw posted on social media, the pain of simply reading the headlines, of Chalamish, of seeing what's going on in the world, if we were able to feel the pain of another, if we were able and desire to provide shelter and comfort and love to another, and feel more connected as a result, more cohesive, we are more of a people, then in fact, something is radically different. Because on Erev Tisha B'Av, we were disparate, diverse groups of Jews, critical of one another, judgmental of one another, dismissive of one another, territorial against one another. But if we really were moved by what these 3 weeks were all about, and Tisha B'Av in particular, then something is different, then we have changed. And then finally we can feel the nechama. The nechama of not having that which was lost returned to us, but the nechama of knowing we have the strength to endure because we have the love and support, camaraderie and connection of those around us. See, the harshness of the galus altogether, to begin with, is not the physical pain alone, but it's the existential spiritual loneliness that it brought. Eicha was written by Yirmiyahu Anavi, who himself experienced the Churban. And you'd think you'd read the book of Eicha and he would describe in graphic detail enemies, mass murder, corpses being pillaged, homes on fire, property being stolen. Yirmiyahu could have given first-hand testimony to what it was like to physically live through the Churban. But he doesn't. He doesn't address the physical condition barely at all. Instead, what Yirmiyahu talks about is the pain of the nefesh, the anguish of the soul. What is the anguish of the soul? What is the ultimate torture of the spirit? It's Eicha Yashva Badad. It's to be alone. It's to be isolated. It's to be by oneself. Bachosif ke balayla. Why? Why does she weep bitterly at night? Because ein la menachem mikolo aveha. No one's there to comfort her. Korea bagduba, all of her enemies have betrayed her. All the fellow bird with whom she was supposed to find shelter and reciprocate and provide, they're gone. They've abandoned her. She's all alone. And Yirmiyahu depicts an imagery of even more potent, more acute, more painful than the physical condition is the spiritual experience of being alone. Of being alone. Talk to people struggling and they'll tell you that they could overcome the poverty, the illness. They could overcome the situation, the condition. What hurts the most is feeling abandoned. It's feeling alone. It's wondering, where are my friends to invite me, to call me, to check in on me, to follow up with me? Where is my community to support me, to lift me, to catch me? Where is the world that's supposed to be a place of kindness and sensitivity and love? And so Yirmiyahu describes that galus, the harshness of the exile, and it's true individually and it's true collectively, is at worst. The worst suffering is the agony of the soul, and the most horrible torture is the loneliness of the spirit. And that's what Yirmiyahu cries out about and asks Eicha. And so tonight I want to ask you a simple question. I ask myself, as we end Tisha B'Av and transition to the period of Nechama. And the question is, what have we done recently to be a good person? You'll say, what kind of question is that? What have I done to be a good person? I'm a good person. I don't steal. I don't take that which doesn't belong to me. I don't I'm a good person. That doesn't make you a good person. That makes you a neutral person. If you don't steal, and you're not mean, and you're not violent, and you're not, you follow the laws, if you obey the laws, the civil laws and the Jewish laws, that doesn't make you a good person. It just means you're not a bad person. And none of us should be satisfied with that. The question is, what have we done to be a good person? Because a good person is someone who relieves the loneliness of another, who spreads out their wing to provide shelter and cover for another. A good person invites someone for a meal who's not necessarily their good friend, but just because they suspect they may not have a lot of friends and they may be alone. A good person calls a widow or widower before going shopping to see if they need something to be picked up, or visits the sick, even if they're not a close friend, or checks in on someone who went through a difficult time, like illness or a loss, long after everyone else forgot and moved on. A good person leaves their comfort zone in the pursuit of justice, unwilling to be indifferent, apathetic and passive when injustice is happening. A good person is willing to let something go and not bear a grudge. A good person is willing to initiate reconciliation with a friend and not stand on ceremony and demand the other person make contact first. If the malady, if the cause is yashva badad, the feeling of being alone, if that's what we were mourning and grieving and lamenting the last 24 hours, then the antidote, the nechama, the solution is to be nosei ba'olam chaveiro. The solution to why we were sitting on the floor is to begin to bear the burden and the pain of our friends, to empathize with their plight, to become part of another person's suffering. To be nosei ba'olam chaveiro is to imagine what it's like to be them. If you haven't spoken recently to someone who's single or lives alone, a divorcee, a widow or widower, or never married, ask them what Shabbos in August is like. Those married, particularly with young children, would laugh and say, what I would give for a Shabbos by myself, I wouldn't accept invitations, I'd eat in a minute, I'd get into bed, I'd sleep, I'd read, I'd learn. Wow, what a Shabbos. Maybe once. What if that's your Shabbos every single Shabbos? Sit by the phone Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, you check your texts and emails, someone going to invite you, will you be alone? Do you have to humiliate yourself to ask and to initiate whether you can come? Do you not feel like it, so you'll just sit by yourself and you finish eating in 15 minutes and then you read a little bit, you take a long nap, you learn a lot, you read some more, and there's still 6 hours left until mincha. Have any idea how painful, how lonely that feels? To be nosei ba'olam chaveiro is to imagine, not to wait to hear it described, but to picture what that's like for someone. And that's one example of which there can be so many, so many. To imagine what it's like to have a spouse who's ill, where all of a sudden all the friends have forgotten you because they think illness is contagious. You've become a pariah, and not only are you the caretaker for your loved one, but you're never getting invited out anymore. What it's like to have a child or grandchild who was abused or molested, suffering trauma or pain. What it's like to be suffering fertility or secondary infertility, or have children or grandchildren. You hear every Shabbos and Shul the announcements, the next person on the birth of their great-great-grandchild, and you're still waiting, longing for that day when you can hear your name. The antidote to yashva badad, to being alone, is to be nosei ba'ol. It's to give some thought to the people around us. Not just to slip into our comfort zone of our friends for the regular Shabbos meal or meet for coffee or get together, but to think about those who are not being thought of enough. You know, if someone were to physically collapse in this room tonight, he or she would be surrounded immediately by concerned people. Hatzalah would be called, they'd be addressed, they'd get 100 phone calls the next day, are you okay? If someone were physically injured, we would rush to help him or her out. And yet, there are spiritually injured people all around us, victims of hurtful words and hurtful deeds and hurtful hands, and they're neglected. No one rushes to help them or to follow up and check in on them. The antidote, the nechama, the Ritzifi has taught us, is to be nosei ba'olam chaveru, is to learn how to anticipate the needs and the pain of a friend and to seek to provide them shelter under our wing, and to know that when we will need shelter, we too can turn under their wing as well. One of the most painful meetings I ever had was a father whose son was one of the troubled, defiant kids who didn't fit in and didn't last in the school system and was very rebellious. And the father said to me, "You know, whenever I see a child in the community who's on crutches or in a wheelchair, who's injured temporarily or chronically, and I see all the other children so sensitively run to their aid, carry their books, push their wheelchair, help them," said this father, "I think to myself, you know, it's beautiful these children take care of the person with the visible injury. But my child suffered from low self-esteem and insecurity. My child struggled scholastically. And instead of anyone metaphorically carrying their books or helping them down the hallway, the other kids walked all over him and only made things worse." Broke my heart hearing that father describe what probably is very true, not only for children, but for adults as well. The Navi tells us, "Lama li rov zivcheichem yomar Hashem." Hashem craves our tefilos with greater kavana, be more on time, less conversation. He wants us to be more vigilant in our observance of halacha, more scrupulous in our lifestyle of Torah. But you know, in the end of the day, nothing is more disappointing to the Ribono Shel Olam than to see one child struggling and the siblings are neglecting them. The siblings are not caring enough to get involved. The Mishnah in Peah, we say every single morning, tells us, "Eilu dvarim she'adam ochel pirasem ba'olam hazeh v'akeren ka'emes le'olam haba, ki beraveim, gemilas chasadim," and so on, "v'tama Torah keneged kulam." The Mishnah lists all of these wonderful, virtuous activities, interpersonal activities, and it concludes, "Talmud Torah keneged kulam," which traditionally is understood to mean that Talmud Torah is greater than all of them. Add all of those up, they don't equal Talmud Torah. Talmud Torah is the core, kiyem chayenu v'orach yamenu. It is everything. But the Rebbe Reb Zusha explained that final expression a little bit differently. Keneged kulam, he said, doesn't mean Torah study is equal to them all. But said the Rebbe Reb Zusha, it means Torah is only valuable. Torah is only meaningful. Torah is only authentic when it is keneged kulam. When you're doing all the other things already, if the Torah generates within you, it refines you to become a person who excels in kibbut aveim and gemilas chasadim and ava shalom bein adam lachaveiro, if it pushes you and propels you to be nosei ba'olam chaveiro, to feel the pain of another and relieve that loneliness, then Talmud Torah, now you're ready for Talmud Torah, now it shines bright, now it's most authentic, now it's keneged kulam. But if you're not keeping these mitzvos, then the Torah doesn't look beautiful on you at all. It's not keneged kulam, it doesn't shine bright, it's not illuminated by those actions. If we're looking for nechama, if we want things to be different, if we want to complete the equation and fulfill the formula and experience that geula which the Gemara promises us, then the antidote to Yashva Badad is to relieve people of their loneliness. Ian McLaren, the 19th century Scottish author, once said, it's the most brilliant quote, he said, "Be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a battle you know nothing about." Always be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a battle you know nothing about. I'm sure my colleagues will tell you, we know so much about people in the community, real hardship and struggle and pain, that they don't wear on their sleeve, that's not public information, that others have no idea. And if others would only know what they're going through, be so much more patient with them, and loving to them, and supportive of them. And so we should bring an attitude in life to everyone, to cut others slack, to extend our wing and welcome them under it, to learn from the Ritzifi, who says, "Nachamu, nachamu ami," who says, "Come under my wing, and when I need you, I will come under yours." and in the schus and the merit of our greater sensitivity, of not putting the 3 weeks in Tisha B'Av behind us, but putting its message and its antidote in front of us. Of going home tonight, and right after we break our fast, with a pen and paper, give some thought. Who in my life, who do I know, who in my sphere of influence might be feeling Yashva Badad, might be feeling all alone? And I can invite them under my wing. Because if we do, if we complete the other half of Shabbos Nachamu, Miyad Nigalim, then Amir Tashem we will fulfill and complete and experience the full redemption Ben Hira V'Yamin.